I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. Again, I want to welcome you here to the show. My name is Dave Beatty. I'm one of your hosts. And, you know, I've already kind of flubbed this up. Let me back up. On today's afternoon show, we're going to be doing a Rogues retrospective. We're going to be talking about Terminator 2, which I consider to be a classic. We're also going to be doing some pop culture news and also some Streaming Wars news as well. Let me just go ahead and segue over to my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, if you're watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everybody. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as BassGod14. That's BassGod14, not BassGod14. That's BassGod, like a bass guitar. And I am the chief financial officer of a small production company in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions, which recently was out in Los Angeles and Huntington Beach and Acton and all sorts of places in California filming Staycation, which will hopefully be coming out very, very soon, early next year. But been working on that pretty hard.
Very cool. Very cool. And I'm hoping maybe in another week or so to have some interesting news about things that are going on with me as well. That would be kind of fun, but still nothing to report just yet. So as I said, on today's show, we're talking about Pocahontas in space. No, wait, that's the wrong James Cameron movie. Wait a minute. No, we're not talking about Avatar. Sorry, Eric said, let me make sure I've got the right Avatar. And he switched it over and it sent me on this whole James Cameron Avatar thing. So I apologize. Probably some weird Avatar references today. All right. So anyhow, on today's show, we are going to be talking about Terminator 2. I think we should just go ahead and get right into it. But we do have some in the Rogues Gallery. Oh, there's our fancy show graphic. How do y'all like that? All right. Hi, Hollywood Jackson.
Good to see you, Hollywood. Thanks for checking us out again. We really appreciate the support.
And I hope Jane joins us a little bit later. It's actually Jane's birthday today. Happy birthday, Mom, if you're watching.
Oh, happy birthday.
All right. If she comes back in later, I'll probably say it again. She may not realize we're on the show right now. All right. Okay. Hey,
James is in the house, and he says, nope. Let's talk about Pocahontas in space.
In my head, I was going to do this whole thing where it's like, on the far edge of the universe is a planet called Pandora. And on Pandora lived Pocahontas, lost in space. Okay, anyhow, see, I got to stop this. It's already getting out of control. All right, so the way retrospective works, for those of you who may be new here to the show, and I did manage to cover up all of our names for the new show graphics, which is awesome. I didn't think about that. I got to keep that in mind next time. All right, but anyhow,
they disappear anyway. If we have the banner up, you know, okay, at the bottom, all they right, disappear anyway. Go. So don't even worry about that. Dave. So, oh, wait a second. We've got to say it. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Jane's in the house. Happy birthday.
Very cool. All right. So,
and by the way, Hollywood says that he loves the graphics.
Oh, thanks. You know, it's weird because I was kind of thinking of more of the Terminator 2, the shooter game. You know, where all the Terminators are coming at you.
Yeah.
That's what I was kind of thinking of, actually, when I put that together.
I like that. That's a great game. That's a great arcade game.
Great game.
I don't know if they did any real decent ports of it. I think they did a few ports, but I don't know if I've ever played any of them. But I know the arcade version was really, really good.
Yeah, it was a great game. I loved that game. It was so much fun. Really great shooter game. All right, so Terminator 2, Judgment Day. We're actually talking about here. We'll go ahead. Let me get the summary out of the way real quick, and then we can kind of get into this. Terminator 2 Judgment Day came out in 1991. I'm going to read you the summary here real quick that comes off of IMDb. It's a little spoiler-filled, everybody, but this movie's been out for a while. This is a cyborg identical to the one who failed to kill Sarah Connor, must now protect her 10-year-old son, John Connor, from a more advanced and powerful cyborg. All right, so there you go. There's your summary. T2 pinball. Yeah, that was fun too. All right, so set this up real quick. How we do a retrospective, we want to first talk about how we first heard about the film. That's where we want to start. How did you first hear about the film? How did you feel about it back then? Then we're going to do is we're going to talk about how we feel about the film today. So those are three components. How did you first hear about it? How did you feel about it then? And having recently rewatched it, how do you feel about the film today? So that's what we want to do. All right. Those of you in the Rogues Gallery watching, please tell us as we go through these different segments. Tell us the same thing. We want to know, how did you start off with? I'll put the question in the Rogues Gallery. How did you first hear about Terminator 2? Eric, why don't you go ahead and go first?
So, of course, I was alive when it came out, and you know, I was young, but I wasn't too young, and I'd already seen the first Terminator film actually on VHS in Mexico of all places, which was kind of interesting. We rented it over at my cousin's house. In fact, I think I mentioned on our actual Terminator review, which by the way, we have reviewed the original Terminator film. And the link is out there. In fact, on the broadcast that I did, the sort of impromptu broadcast I did last Sunday because of our technical problems, I actually put the link in there for the previous Terminator review. So if you're interested in that, please check it out. And I think I mentioned, I think that was the only reason I saw Terminator was because I was in visiting in Mexico at the time, and my cousins ended up renting it. And that's how I got to see Terminator, because I was one of those kids that wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies until I think older than most kids in the 80s, because it seemed like in the 80s, everybody watched rated R movies, you know, especially like the horror stuff and things like that. But I was late to the game, but I had seen the original Terminator is my point. So when Terminator 2 was coming out, I knew what it was. It was highly anticipated for me. Of course, I was a huge Arnold Schwarzenegger fan. I'm still a huge Arnold Schwarzenegger fan, especially of his classic like 80s, you know, early 90s type of stuff, basically the pre-Governator stuff, I guess, even though that's not exactly true. There's some stuff even that later on that I've actually liked from Schwarzenegger as well. But the thing is that like I was a huge fan. So the movie was highly anticipated to me. I was very, very much aware of it. The hype machine was in high gear for this film. It was really like an event movie at the time. If you were alive at the time, you know, it was pretty much on a Star Wars level, you know what I mean? Not like episode one level, but definitely like, you know, Attack of the Clones or something like that level. It was definitely like on a Star Wars level. It was like the movie of the year. Everybody was waiting for it. So I was very much aware of this movie when it was coming out because of, you know, Schwarzenegger's huge star appeal and because I had seen the previous film.
So the way that I heard about Terminator 2, and this is going to take everyone way back to a place and time in which some people may not have never even experienced. But if you go far enough back in time, baby Eric was live for T2. If you go far enough back in time, hey, Jackie, you know, there was a day and a time when if you went to a sci-fi fantasy convention, they would have little presentation panels, and it was for upcoming movies, right? I know this is the thing that they don't do anymore, but back in the day, they used to do this. And so the movie studios, in addition to posters and whatever, they would actually send out, wait for it, static slides, everybody. Right. There's little pictures about like yay big. They were square. It went to a little projector, and they were still images, and they would do a slide projection show. And then whoever was putting on the panel, usually associated with the convention, right? They would read like a little summary, and they would talk a little bit about whatever it was that the studio had actually prepared to help promote the film. I don't remember which convention it was. I know it was one of the Mid-South Fantasy conventions, but they did one of those little slide presentation panels. And that was the first time I'd heard anything about it there being a Terminator 2 being developed. They had a couple of slides that was in with a bunch of other movies that they were talking about. I'm pretty sure it wasn't with that Christian Slater Hard Rain movie, but for some reason, a lot of this stuff runs together because it's a long time ago, everybody, okay? But I remember that was the first time I'd ever heard anything about Terminator 2. They had a couple of images, and they were just talking about that they were filming it or getting ready to start filming it, that was the very, very first thing that I remembered hearing or seeing anything. And then prior to that, Terminator was one of those movies that you recommended amongst you, like your friends, like if they hadn't necessarily seen it. Because the first time I saw Terminator was actually on VHS. That was how I first had seen the original Terminator movie. And I didn't think they'd make another one, to be honest with you. But I remember it was a sci-fi fantasy convention. It was part of a slide presentation of upcoming features. You know, conventions back in the day were, they're very antiquated by today's standards when you think about the things that they could do with technology. But I miss things like that, like those upcoming, you know, movie panel. And that was kind of how they used to get the word out. For those of you who may have experienced that back in the day, was actually at conventions that, in, you know, they had posters and different things out too, but they would actually do like a little preview presentation, you know, not with the actors or anyone there, but they would just send some stills out, you know, with some little copy, and they'd do a little panel, and they'd do a little slide, and go up, and they'd be like, so, and they'd read you about it. So anyhow.
I remember that happening at Star Trek conventions, like whatever film they were promoting at the time, especially with the original cast, because by the time I was going to conventions, they were promoting the films. There was, you know, the original series was long gone. Next Gen was starting to come up, of course. But I remember when they were promoting like Star Trek 4 or Star Trek 5 or any of those kind of films, Star Trek 6, they would have slides. I do remember that distinctly.
Very cool. And that's how I remember. Now, we do have some comments here in the Rogues Gallery. I don't know if you want to put some of those up, Eric, and we'll go through
Yeah,
those.
Absolutely. So Jane says, my family was excited, and we're waiting for it to come to the movies as best I can remember. And then John McClay says, T2 opened my eyes to visual effects and computer animation. My mind was thoroughly blown away. And definitely that's something we have to talk about, John, for sure, is that the groundbreaking special effects of this film and whether they still hold up or not. That's the question, right? Whether they still hold up. And Dave and I will give you our opinion on that. And then James says, I remember an interview with Linda Hamilton on MTV News talking about the filming. This was my first time hearing about it. And James, I remember hearing a lot from MTV as well. I remember MTV supported this film like to the nines. There's also a music video I know that was associated with this that Schwarzenegger actually appeared in character as the Terminator. So I also remember MTV really supporting this film and was really, really behind it.
And, you know, that's the other thing, too. Like, the first time I remembered hearing about it was that upcoming movie presentation. But you get to a certain point and there was Terminator 2 stuff everywhere. There were ads in the comic books. You know, obviously movie posters in the movie theaters, but all kinds of different coverage where you want to talk about Starlog or Entertainment Tonight, or it doesn't matter who it was. Like, it was everywhere. And, you know, when you see I still love this film. I don't have a lot of, I'm not going to have anything negative to say about this movie, but all I'm going to say is though, but it was well worth the anticipation. Back in the day too. Like, it was a highly touted movie, but when you went to the movie theaters, definitely back in, you know, 91 when this came out, it definitely delivered. So it wasn't like an overly hyped film that kind of left you feeling kind of ambivalent about it, like RoboCop 2. Maybe we'll talk about that someday.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a good one to talk about. And as Hollywood says, back in those days, that's back when MTV was still good. And I agree with you, Hollywood. That is back when MTV was still good before it turned into a bunch of reality BS. So that's my personal opinion on that.
All right. So that's how we felt about the film back in the day. Now we're going to just, you know, reminisce about how we felt about first seeing the film. I know I remember going to the movie theater and seeing it and being just completely blown away by the film. At the time, it had incredible groundbreaking special effects. The acting in it was, you know, pretty much for the most part, top notch. Everyone's definitely given their all, you know, whether you, how you feel about some of the performances may vary, but everyone's definitely giving it their all. And I just remember loving the film when I first saw it. And we're not going to get into any spoilers, but I think most people have seen this movie, but, it was just a really great film, and it was such a great film that I feel like every film that's attempted to come after suffers because this is such a great film. I feel like this is a Superman the movie debate all over again. This film is such a great follow-up that anything else that tries to follow it, it's not only to have a tough road to hoe, so to speak, but this is an incredibly difficult film to follow because it's just that. I remember back in the day, in my mind, it was just that good. So I thoroughly loved the film back in the day. How did you feel about the film back in the day, Eric?
I was totally enthralled by it. I loved it. I did see it in the movie theater. And I remember that it was very highly anticipated. And I just remember what a phenomenon it became at the time. Pretty much everybody I knew had seen it. Everybody was talking about it. It was all over the media. It was something that, as far as like in popular culture, it was something that was really, really big and widely accepted. Maybe not so much in critic circles, right? At the time, I don't think it was highly rated at the time by critics, but it was definitely very highly rated by the fans and the general public when this movie came out. And I definitely accepted that view. In fact, I thought that it should have gotten an Oscar at the time. I was young, but I really thought that. I legitimately thought that it should have gotten an Oscar. And I also thought, even at the time, and I still think this, by the way, I really thought Linda Hamilton should have got a Best Supporting Actress Oscar win, nomination and win for this. If nothing else, that should have happened. That should have been the one Oscar thing that happened for this film, beyond even the special effects, which were groundbreaking. And I don't know off the top of my head if it ended up winning any awards. It certainly should have. I don't remember if it won any awards for special effects. I would think it did, but I don't know that. But I think even more than that, I think Linda Hamilton's performance really, really impressed me, because first of all, I had seen the original Terminator, and the character progression is amazing, because in the first Terminator, they set it up very well for you that Linda Connor, is supposed to be the mother of the future. In fact, Linda Hamilton gives that line in a very sarcastic way in the original Terminator movie, because she's all like, do I seem like the mother of the future? I can't even balance my checkbook. I'm a mess. I'm a ditz. You know what I mean? I can't do this stuff. I can't do this. And what I really appreciated even back then was that the fact that the character had progressed to be that badass mother of the future. That line from Reese, it gives me chills, because that line from Reese in the original movie where he said, this was a chance to meet the legend, to meet, John Connor's mother, It's almost like he's talking about the Virgin Mary. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the way you get it, right? Because it really is analogous to that, right? Because John Connor is the savior of the future, And so you can feel that. And then Linda Hamilton really pulled it off. She really went from that meek, kind of pathetic, almost loserish kind of girl that's running around on a scooter, doesn't even have a car, And, she's now like this total badass, and she worked out, she transformed her body, which I was really impressed by. I remember reading articles about that and her training regime and all that kind of stuff. And it was something that was really hyped. And it was like, it was one of the few examples where like the hype was like, wasn't even as good as the reality when you saw it, because she really sold it. And, I'd also watched Linda Hamilton a lot on that Beauty and the Beast television series. I used to watch it with my mom. We used to watch it together. And so Linda Hamilton to me was a very meek kind of pretty girl to me, almost like a living doll, if you will, And so to see her in this role and to see that transformation and the fact that it worked so well with the original source material, it really blew me away. It really blew me away, because I really felt there was an intense character progression, which we don't see anymore. That doesn't happen. Hashtag Mary Sue. This wasn't a Mary Sue. This is where it feels earned, and it's very earned. And you can see the progression, because there has been a long time period between the two films, right? But you can see it in her, right? You can see it in her. She did the work. She went out there and she got some guns, And she worked out and she was working with weapons and all that stuff. So, that part of it, I think more than anything else, especially at the time, because I was kind of enamored with Linda Hamilton at the time, with Beauty and the Beast and all that stuff. I feel like that's more than anything. That's what made an impression to me at the time as a you know, kind of like a young, I think it was like a barely a teenager when this film came out.
Well, and that's an interesting perspective because I definitely could see, in all honesty, especially back in the day, and haven't actually just recently rewatched this too. I kind of agree with you, Eric. I do feel like that Linda Hamilton should have received an Oscar nomination for her performance as Sarah Connor because she really has progressed a lot as a character. And at times, you see also the toll that this has taken on her. She yes. goes from being the warrior to still being that person who's damaged, you know, from what she had to deal with, you know. It's interesting. Her performance is incredibly compelling. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. Because even though, you know, Arnold's portrayal, you know, of the Terminator is a little bit more nuanced and kind of friendly, you know what I mean? Because of the nature that his character fulfills in the film, you know, he's really great. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, before we get too far into this, because we should talk about how we actually feel about the film, you know, today. So,
let's go to the Rose Gallery real quick.
Yeah,
let's get to the Rose Gallery. So Jane said she thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Hollywood Jackson says it was awesome. I still have both on VHS. It's funny you say that, Hollywood, because we were just discussing, because we are going to be discussing format a little bit in this, because we haven't really brought up format very much on this show. And I know there is a raging debate out there about format, particularly DVD versus Blu-ray versus 4K. But when we were talking about this in the pre-show, I did bring up VHS. I actually did bring that up. But I don't know if I have this film on VHS. I don't think I do. I still have my VHS collection, but I never look at it because, quite frankly, I never watch it. But I still have it. But I don't know if I have this on VHS. Both of us said, Dave and I both said that we actually saw the original Terminator on VHS. We didn't see it in the theater. So we definitely have had that experience. James says, which he says, sorry. He says, sorry, Misty Boo, my cat walked across the keyboard. Not a secret code word. Thank you for that clarification, James. We appreciate that. Jane also goes on to say, after experiencing Terminator at Universal Studios, watching it brought the experience back. Universal had made it feel real. I never experienced Terminator at Universal Studios. I assume you have, Dave.
Yes, I have. I was actually there with my mother. I've done both. I've done the one in Hollywood and I don't know if they still exist, to be honest with you, but at the time I had done the one in Hollywood and actually the one in Florida as well. At least I think there was one at both. Maybe I'm mistaken. They're so similar. They kind of run together, but, the thing that was neat about that experience is, you know, James Cameron, you know, put that Terminator experience together and he intended that to be a sequel in continuity, you know, with his actual films. And it's interesting because it's like you're watching like new footage that actually had, you know, Edward Furlong and Arnold in their respective roles. It had pyrotechnics and stuff that went on inside the theater itself. And it was like you were touring Cyberdyne. And then at one point Terminators come out of the floor, like all around the audience. And it was something else. It was pretty amazing. I always thought it was really, really cool. It's you know, those kind of experiences are fun when they're done incredibly well. And I felt like the Terminator experience that was at Universal was definitely worthwhile. But like I said, I don't even know if it still exists anymore, to be honest with you.
I don't either. I don't know if that's still something they have. I personally never got to see it. And I'm pretty sure it was there when I went to Universal Studios Florida, but I'm not positive. It may have been like right before then because it was definitely around that age when I went to Florida. But I don't remember if it was, you know, pre or post. The one thing I remember was the King Kong thing. That's the thing that sticks out to me the most, the King Kong ride. But yeah, I don't recall if they even had Terminator the last time I went to any Universal Studios, which is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Oh, that's a different movie. Never mind. James goes on to say, I loved it. My date hated it. We are obviously not together. So that's a deal breaker, huh? I don't know if that would be a deal breaker for me. I have to think about that. If they didn't like Terminator 2, would that be a deal breaker for me? I don't know. I don't know. But I do respect your opinion, James. Definitely. And then,
and I was just going to say along those lines, my wife, Micah, this is one of her favorite movies, and her birth date is actually on August 29th.
There you go. There you go.
Judgment Day for me.
Judgment Day for you. And then John McClay goes on to say, I first encountered T2 through a Fangoria magazine article, and it was the horror elements that first attracted me to the film. I'm surprised by that. I would have thought I'd been in Starlog. You know, I used to get Starlog. I still have an issue or two in my collection. I never really got into Fangoria, but I had a friend who was a big, big horror person, so he always had them. And I'm surprised. You know, I didn't even think about that. But you could think of Terminator 2 sort of in a horror context. I've always thought of it as a sci-fi movie. Do you have any comments on that, Dave?
Well, there is that scene where, you know, John Connor tells, you know, the T-800, show him, you know, and he literally does cut off his lower forearm, you know, in front of that family. So it definitely does have horror elements to it. You know, because that's the thing. It's like there's a lot of gore when you talk about the damage that the Terminator goes through. I feel like it's weird because I personally feel like the first Terminator film is definitely like very much a horror kind of a film. Because you basically have that Michael Myers unstoppable killer, you know what I mean? But it turns out he's a robot from the future. Spoiler alert.
I think we might have touched on that in our first review. I can't remember. I haven't had a chance to review it, but I think we might have touched on that. I definitely could see it more with the original Terminator than Terminator 2. That's just from a personal perspective. And I am surprised it was in Fangoria. That's a neat insight there, John. Thank you for sharing that, because I definitely am aware of that magazine. But again, I would have thought it. I'm sure actually it was. It was all over Starlog as well. You know, at the time it was definitely all over Starlog. Jan goes on to say, at the end, the Terminator exploded. You felt the wind and moisture. Particles of it were floating in the air. And I assume she's talking about the ride.
Yes. She's talking about the Universal Terminator experience. Yes.
That's cool. Now I wish I had been able to experience it myself.
So now that we've talked about how we felt about it back in the day, now's the part we need to talk about how we feel about the film, having recently rewatched it. Now, it may have been a little while for those of you in the Rogues Gallery since you've actually seen Terminator 2, but we still want to know kind of how you feel about it anyway, even if you haven't just seen it just recently. We want to know your thoughts. So Eric and I have both recently rewatched Terminator 2 specifically for the show today. So we're going to talk about how we feel about the film today. But, you know, whether you've seen it really super recently or not, we still want to know how you feel about it. We want to know what you think. Your opinion is important to us. All right, so.
Or otherwise known as the Picardinator.
that's just not right, Hollywood.
I like it. The Picardinator. Right. Destroying good media everywhere.
It's funny. We were actually talking about Picard just briefly, actually before this show actually started.
That's true. We were
both expressed how much we disliked it still. All right, so Eric, why don't you go ahead and go first? Why don't you tell us how you feel about Terminator 2, having just recently rewatched it?
So I wanted to bring up the fact that format is kind of important in this discussion. So this is my personal copy of Terminator 2. As I like to mention on the show, I do not have an extensive personal collection of movies, but I definitely have this one. And this is the Ultimate Edition of T2. We discussed it earlier. This is the edition Dave has as well. It's one of those big, you know, kind of thick DVD copies. It's got two discs. One of the other reasons I want to bring this up is because it has two different versions of the film. So it has the theatrical version, and it also has a special edition version. And I've seen both. It's been a while since actually I watched either one. And then, of course, for the show, I had to make a decision, which version am I going to watch? Now, because of the Rogues retrospective format, I decided I should watch the theatrical, because I saw the theatrical originally, and therefore I can compare, you know, the theatrical to theatrical better that way. Although I kind of remember liking the special edition better. I felt that there were some key deleted scenes that they put into the special edition that I thought really enhanced the story. But I can also kind of understand why they took them out. The one big one that sticks out to me is actually the reappearance of Reese. Reese actually does come back in the special edition. For those of you that are not aware of that, perhaps you have you don't have the special edition, but maybe you have a DVD that has a deleted scenes in it. So that's a big one. The other one I want to point out, just because I think it's a really key scene that's not in the theatrical edition, is when they turn the CPU on. And I thought that was actually kind of a key plot point because and it's also key to lore, in my opinion. I love lore because it kind of tells you how Skynet kept the Terminators under control, how they themselves could not do what Skynet himself did, which I thought was interesting that they had that in there, but then they took it out. So there's actually a scene in the special edition and perhaps in your deleted scenes edition, if you have one of those, where they switch the CPU on in the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator's head, so that he can learn better. And that also explains how he becomes so human. And you can see that in the performance, actually. You can see in the beginning of the movie how Arnold is very, very cold. But of course, by the end of the movie, it almost makes me choke up. He hugs John Connor, you know what I mean? Which I thought was really touching. Because it's like this machine, you know, has grown so much. So again, you know, I was talking about character progression with Linda Hamilton. Watching it this time, I was really watching the character progression of Arnold Schwarzenegger and how this Terminator is much different than the previous Terminator. Although when he starts out, he very much is that classic Terminator. One of the things I also like that I think is interesting is at the time, everybody pretty much knew what the setup was. We basically knew that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be the good guy in this one. That was pretty much was already out there, and pretty much everybody knew that because it was hard to hide because, you know, you had this new Terminator that was, you know, changing into liquid metal, and that was a really big deal. The special effects were a big deal. But what was kind of nice was the way the movie's made, you don't know that. And they assume you don't know that. And there's this anticipation when the two Terminators are trying to find John Connor. There's kind of almost like this anticipation that Arnold is still the bad guy. And that, you know, Robert Patrick, you know, might be the good guy, right? They don't show the fact that he's a Terminator. For instance, they don't show him morph into the police officer that he's killed. They just show him like he took his clothes. That's kind of what it looks like. That's the way it's cut. So there's this anticipation all the way up to that initial scene that if you didn't know the hype, like let's say that you're a younger person today and you didn't know the hype, if you were watching it, there's this sort of anticipation of, oh, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? And I really like that because I feel what that does is it helps the movie kind of stand the test of time. You know what I mean? For people that are not familiar with the franchise. And there are lots of young people that are not familiar with the franchise. So it's kind of interesting to me that they kept that in there because I think it actually helps the film age better. And it kind of gives it sort of more of a classic feel. But yeah, you know, I really was enjoying Arnold in this one. Like I said, originally it was all about Linda Hamilton. But watching it today, I really see that progression now of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the fact I didn't give him enough credit for what he did with that role and some of the subtleties. He's a much better actor than I think people give him credit for, especially when you watch this, because there is a very subtle difference and he really does progress over the course of the film from this cold machine basically to a surrogate father for John Connor. I mean, they even say that, you know, even Sarah Connor says that basically she has accepted this machine as the best example of a surrogate father for John Connor. And I love that whole sequence where she's talking about how, you know, he would never hit him. He'd never get drunk. He would never leave him and he would die to protect him, you know? And it's like, it's kind of cool because I remember as a kid, there is that moment where John Connor's like, I got my own Terminator. And I remember, cause I was pretty young, I was like, wouldn't that be cool to have your own Terminator? You know, especially though it's like Arnold, who's like the biggest, you know, star at the time and everything. And he's your protector and your buddy and he does stuff with you. You know what I mean? Like it would be so cool, you know, to have that. So it kind of brought me back to my childhood a little bit, that sort of giddiness of that idea of a boy and his robot, you know, which I've always thought is kind of a funny idea just in of itself, a boy and his robot or a girl and his robot, a kid and this giant robot that's protecting them, you know. I like that concept. And in fact, I've had some story ideas about that. So it brought all that back. So I did get an appreciation. I will say this, my one big criticism always has been and probably always will be Edward Furlong. And I hate to pile up on him because you hear this all the time. People pile up on child actors all the time. And that's the one group of actors I like to stick up for because I know that's not really their fault half of the time. But I did think at the time, and I still think, that there was some miscasting there. I really do. He does not fit the John Connor we see in that beginning scene, which I love. Man, I love that beginning scene. It's like the first, 3 minutes of the movie, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, if that. Seeing the future and seeing that big, huge battle, you know, between the Terminators, you know, and the humans, and seeing John Connor. I love that scene where John Connor's walking through the hallway and it's a POV shot and everybody's saluting him. Oh, it gives me chills. I love that because it's kind of the fruition of what you saw in the first Terminator, right? This is who John Connor actually is. And I've always kind of felt that Edward Furlong didn't quite fit that role. Now, I have said I think Terminator 3 actually addressed that and actually addressed that in a very good way. But at the same time, Terminator 3 is just not in the same league as Terminator or Terminator 2. It just isn't. And I also think it's kind of interesting because the original idea was to have a very different ending and a very set ending. There was never supposed to be a Terminator 3. They originally had a solid ending for this that basically told you what happened to John Connor in the future and Sarah Connor. And they took that out and instead decided to go with the highway scene to leave it a little open. But originally this was supposed to be it. There was never supposed to be a Terminator 3, you know? So those are kind of my feelings about it. You know, I basically have gained a lot more respect for Arnold. Still love Linda. Still think she's awesome. But Edward still, I don't know.
Well, here's how I feel about the film, having just recently rewatched it. It's been a little while since I have rewatched this. Typically, it seems like I typically have it on at least once a year. At some point, it's usually on in the studio while I'm working. It's weird since I started Kirby Tees, my t-shirt company. It's been difficult because usually on the weekends when I am crazy busy, which normally I would have been in the studio for that, I'm now actually printing shirts, and I'm in a non-environmentally controlled environment, and I have music blaring because that's pretty much all I can pay attention to. Or I'll occasionally listen to the Retro Rogues Live audio show. Check that out over on Anchor or wherever you prefer your podcast. But anyhow, I don't often have movies on as much anymore as I used to. But pretty much usually at least once a year, I'll have Terminator 2 on. And having sat down and rewatched it for the show today, you know,
clarification, which version did you watch? Because I did talk about
it. I watched the special edition.
Oh, that's cool. So you watched the special edition. I watched the theatrical. That's cool.
Okay. Yeah, I prefer the special edition, and I prefer it for the things that you were just saying. Let me just go ahead and throw potentially the two potential weaknesses I feel from the film out and just get that out of the way right off the bat. Okay, number one, Edward Furlong does occasionally come across kind of a little weird, you know, in a couple different scenes. But I still feel like he did a good job. You know, I'm not going to pile any hate onto him because at the time and as well as now, you know, it's a little grating at times. But to be honest with you, I've never had a ton of issues with him. I've just kind of always accepted that he was the younger John Connor because this is who James Cameron picked, you know, so I've never had a lot of issues with that. But I could see what you were saying, Eric. I mean, I think it's pretty apparent. It's almost kind of like Jake Lloyd, you know, in Phantom Menace. It's the same thing.
I will say it's not that bad. You know what I mean? Because
I'm not saying it's the same thing.
I feel so bad for him as a person because of what's happened to him. But it's not that bad. It's not as bad as, right. As Annie. You know what I mean? It's not. I just want to make that clarification that I don't think it's. I don't think he's that bad.
Well, I'm talking in terms of like he just, you know, he's supposed to be a bad boy, you know, kind of, you know, in this, you know, stealing money and whatever else, and being a little bit more rough around the edges, and it doesn't really come across quite. But
it's
anyhow,
uneven, right? It's a little uneven in that respect, yeah. Right? Because he is supposed to be sort of a criminal. They even show he has a criminal record, and he's sort of like, you know, he's been bounced around and, you know, that classic setup. But then when he's with the Terminator, he's kind of like that, you know, little kid, right? He's kind of like, yeah. like a goofy kid, you know. So,
and that's kind of the thing. That's the part where it feels, I don't know, it doesn't quite work. Now I can't remember what my other comment was. I was going to get my two things out of the way right off the bat. The Reese thing. I agree with you. While I prefer the special edition version, when Michael Biehn shows back up as Reese in the dream sequence, again, spoiler alert, we're going to be talking spoilers at this point. When he does show up, it just take me out of it a little bit. But I understand what James Cameron was going for, so it's fine. And I do prefer the special edition because I like having all the extra scenes. The one scene in particular, like you, Eric, that I like the most is actually the scene where they take the CPU out of the Terminator's head, and you get all this explanation about how the Terminators actually work.
Yes.
You know, and it's really interesting to get that kind of information because it helps us better understand, you know, how the machines function. And
again, that irony that Skynet was not going to let the Terminators do what he did. Because Skynet did achieve sentience, right? I think that's kind of interesting. So
it's a really cool moment, and it's really kind of neat too. And I like the performances in that too. And I would say Edward Furlong is also really good in that scene too, where Linda Hamilton is going to crush the CPU, and he actually stops her, and he's pleading with her. Like everybody's great in that scene.
That is a great part of the scene. In fact, I was kind of. I couldn't identify that scene as I was watching the theatrical version because I was like, isn't there a scene where they argue about getting rid of the Terminator? And it's from the special edition. So thanks for that clarification because I was trying to fit that puzzle piece in my mind. And yeah, that's right. It's from the deleted scene. That's where that scene's from.
And I feel like that's a really powerful moment too because I almost feel like even though I feel like there's some subtext here when John is saying, we need him, you know, I think for him, it's almost like this is the first time it feels like he's had a family. He's got a surrogate father. His mom is there. They're on this, you know, road trip together, you know, even though it's a messed up situation, in a weird way for him, this might be the first time that he's had, you know, kind of a cohesive family unit, you know, that I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of subtext going on in that scene.
I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. That's exactly right. Yeah. It is the first time he's had like a cohesive family unit. He's got his mom back, and now he's got this cool Terminator that's basically his dad. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know. It's fun too.
Yeah, and so I got my two things kind of out of the way. This film to me, I consider to be a classic, and it's interesting to me how well everything still holds up. You know, like I don't have a newer transfer of the film, so I don't know what the current transfers of the film are like. I just have this one I've always had. But to me, whenever I watch the film, when you start looking at the storytelling, you start looking at how it's structured, you know, when you look at how they use the effects, not just the effects, but how they use the effects and how the effects enhance and help tell the story, which is really important. There's so many neat, subtle touches to so many different things that they do with this film. And it's so well crafted and so well put together. And everyone is doing a great job. You know, Robert Patrick's doing a great job. Obviously, Linda Hamilton, Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing a good job. The performance is a little uneven, but I even feel like Edward Furlong is definitely giving his all. And
I like the psychiatrist too.
Yeah, he's good too. And then there's
the fourth billing, I think, or fifth billing on the film. If you notice in the credits, right. He's like the fifth person that because he has the meatiest part out of the core. You know what I mean? Basically,
right.
Well, maybe the doctor as well, the creator. But you know, it's kind of funny because I do like his performance as well, and I thought it was funny they brought him back. I think a lot of people, I remember the audience reacting to that, like, hey, that's that guy, you know, from the first one, So I thought that was kind of a funny thing that they did.
And not many people talk about it, but the actor who plays Dyson, you know, he's a really important part of this movie. And that actor does a tremendous, he does a great job.
Very well done. Yeah.
And when I rewatched this, it's interesting because, like I said, it's been about a year since I've rewatched this film. And, you know, we had the newer Terminator movies and whatever else that have come out kind of here and there. And that's the thing I keep coming back to. I mean, to me, I feel like that this film is so strong, you know, that that when you look at all the attempts they've attempted to do after this, and let me just put this out there. I like Terminator Salvation. I've always enjoyed Terminator Salvation. It's got a lot of problems. Yes, but it's the only one of the films that for me personally, there's a moment in it that I love, and I love that moment. And I'm talking about the sequels, not Terminator 2. Terminator 1, number 2 is not in this conversation. I'm talking about all the films that have come after Rise of Machines, Salvation, all of them. Genesis, doesn't matter because I've seen all of them. I've seen all of them in the movie theaters. It's the only one, Salvation is the only one that I feel like gets close to a lot of the feelings that this film has. And I love that moment when you see an older John Connor, the supposed savior of the whatever, the future, and he's facing the version of Arnold in that film. I love that moment where the two of them fight because it's interesting because that's the only one of the films I feel like give this an enclosure in a weird way. If we have to continue, you know, like I like the TV series a little bit. I don't know. It's just, here's the thing. This film, I feel like, suffers from the same problem that a lot of these other franchises do. It's like, it's the Superman the movie argument all over again. Superman the movie is so great. Anything that attempts to come after it just feels like a mismanaged thing. Like, it just doesn't quite work, you know? And I feel like that, and I was going to tell Eric, I was going to give this as my perspective. I feel like that the Terminator franchise as a whole, if we want to look at it as a whole, is one of the most mismanaged franchises when you look at the amount of money spent to try and have a worthwhile follow-up, and none of it's quite worked. A lot of interesting ideas in all of them. That's the thing. There's interesting ideas in all of them. Genesis, I think, is the worst, by the way. There's a lot of interesting ideas in all of them. But at the end of the day, none of them quite work or quite click, you know? And I feel like the big thing that's missing is, in all honesty, is just James Cameron. You know, I mean, you know, James Cameron, this was his idea. He created the original Terminator. He did Terminator 2. He did the Terminator Experience that Jane was talking about earlier on the show, where he has his hands directly on it and he is controlling the Terminator franchise. I feel like it works and it's interesting because it's kind of more in line with a person's vision. And I feel like the further you get away from that person's vision, like the more maligned and sort of it sounds off key, I guess is the best way to describe it. And this film is so great, and I feel like it's still so great that I feel like that nothing that follows after is going to ever equal it because it's just that good of a film. So that's how I feel about it today. I can't recommend Terminator 1 and Terminator 2 enough, like to anyone who's never seen them. And I personally, my wife and I were talking about this. It'd be really interesting to actually watch this film, the first Terminator and second Terminator film, with someone who's never seen these films and doesn't know anything about them. Just like you said, Eric, to see if they would read that coming, that the T-800 is actually the good guy in the second film. Like, if they would see that coming or not.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Now, I do have a different perspective as far as the franchise on a whole. Dave and I touched on this in our pre-show that we were going to talk about this. I do have a little bit of a different way of looking at this. In some ways, I feel like it should have just ended with Terminator 2. I don't know if they should have gone with the ending that they intended. I don't want to spoil it because it's like, you know, why? It's a deleted scene. You know, it's just something that you should see and you can see what that original intention was, and I don't know if it works or not. For me, the thing that I always wanted to see, and I think the vast majority of the Terminator fandom wanted to see, was very obvious. We wanted to see a full movie in the future with the humans fighting the Terminators with the plasma rifles. You know what I mean? They had to have the plasma rifles, not M16s like we got in Salvation. That was so disappointing to me.
With the 40-watt range, right?
Yeah, with the 40-watt range. I love the 40-watt rifle with the 40-watt range, you know. It, you know, just what's on the rack, buddy, you know. I love that line. I used to say that to one of my friends all the time. We just thought that was cool. We wanted to see them with the futuristic weapons. Again, I go back to the first, I think it's only 3 or 4 minutes of this movie. That scene is epic. And considering the technology at the time, I'm like, that's what I wanted to see. That's what Terminator 3 should have been. You know, that's what I wanted to see. That's what everybody wanted to see. But instead, they just keep going back to the same kind of tired formula, with the exception of Terminator Salvation, which is set in the future. But it's too much like the near future, in my opinion, and it's really a miss, in my opinion. There are good elements to it, but overall, I was very disappointed because I thought the previews looked excellent. You know, I remember I watched the trailer like 1,000 times. I thought it was so cool. And then when I saw it in the theater, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. Plus, Terminator always suffers from the time travel paradoxes, which at some point you're just all like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. Even Terminator 2 is a great example of that, because in my mind, if they had succeeded in changing the future, you know, John Connor should like disappear, or all of time should just kind of crumble in on itself because they're in this huge paradox, right? I mean, it's all a huge paradox. I mean, his father was born in the future and all that stuff. So it does get a little bit silly, you know, at a certain point. And they do that even more in Salvation. So actually, of the two, I actually kind of prefer Terminator 3, just because I feel that Terminator 3 kind of fixed the my personal opinion of the miscasting of Edward Furlong, because they kind of explain why John actually became the leader of the resistance. And this is like a mild spoiler alert. It's not because he was a badass. That's not why John Connor became the leader of the resistance. If you ever watch Terminator 3, that's actually a neat twist that I appreciated and actually makes the movie for me, because it's not that great. You know, Terminator 3 is really not that great a movie, but that twist I liked. Just because to me it kind of corrected the casting of Edward Furlong, which is my greatest criticism of the Terminator 2. But in a lot of ways, I feel like it just should have ended. And if anything, they should have just had a movie about the future. And you don't even have to put it in any context. You don't have to say whether this future actually happened or not or anything like that. Just give us the war of the future. Let's see it. Let's watch it. Let's see the Terminators and the humans fighting each other, because there's so many great scenes, especially also in the original Terminator. You know, when we went back and watched it, I didn't realize how many of the scenes are in the future in the original Terminator, because Reese has a lot of flashbacks and does explain what that world is like. And that's what I wanted to see, that burnt out, destroyed world and this desperate struggle between the humans and the Terminators. And that's where I felt the franchise should have gone, and it never really has. And that's what's disappointed me about where the franchise has gone.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, and that's kind of, for me, I think that's one of the things I was most looking forward to Salvation, was actually seeing the future war. And I think in their mind, the producers of that film were thinking, well, let's dial it back and let's show them just the very, very beginning, and then we'll build up to that. You know, like, yeah, let's do 3 movies and get to the big, like,
that's what they wanted. They wanted to do a trilogy. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example about sometimes you can't try to pre-plan your trilogy. You just got to make the best movie you possibly can.
Let's go for a trilogy when we already have a quadrilogy. Come on, guys. Don't be so greedy. This is something I'm pretty consistent on. Let's just see a complete story, right? Hollywood seems to have that problem, and you can see they've been having that problem for a long time. Give me a complete story. Give me all 3 acts, right? Don't just give me the first act of a 3-act story. That to me is lazy, and I don't appreciate it.
And we have some interesting comments actually in the Rogues Gallery too.
All right, we'll start out with Hollywood Jackson. He says, every time I see Robert Patrick, I'm waiting for him to turn into the Terminator. And I do think Robert Patrick has suffered from a little bit of typecasting, honestly, because I think he is a very good actor if you've seen some of his other work. And I think he does get that a lot, where people kind of just see him as that character, because I think it's definitely his largest role. There might be some exceptions, but I think of what a great actor is. Like, I think of Walk the Line. If you've seen him in Walk the Line as Johnny Cash's father, you really see the acting range this man has, because there's a really good dynamic there because Johnny Cash did not have a good relationship with his father. And he does a very, very good portrayal. So I think he's an underrated actor. And I do think he does get a little typecasting because people do associate him with this role so much. I think you're not alone in that. John Clay says, T2 is a great example of one of those films that's lightning in a bottle. Everything is perfect and it's impossible to recapture in sequels or spinoffs. I agree. I think you're right, John. I think it is lightning in a bottle. It's very hard to emulate. Well, we've seen that with the other Terminator films. I mean, this one just stands out. You know, the only thing you can really compare it to is the original, right? It's the only thing you can really kind of try to counter with, at least in my opinion. It's the only one you can really counter with. And he goes on to say, Ghostbusters is another great example of this. Its sequels never managed to capture what the original had, even with the same cast and filmmakers. You know, it'd be fun sometime is to visit Ghostbusters 2, because I think it's highly underrated. And I don't know how you feel about it, Dave, but I actually think Ghostbusters 2 is highly underrated.
Well, I'd be interested to talk about it on the show. You know, Ghostbusters 2 is just Ghostbusters 2 in my mind. You know, the first one to me is still the best, you know, but I don't dislike Ghostbusters 2. But I don't feel like it, you know, we'll have to do it on the show. Be interesting to talk about it on the show.
Well, do you feel, as John says, that it did not manage to capture what the original had?
Yeah, I feel that way.
So we'll have a different perspective on this. Maybe we will actually. Of course, it would be hard. I really would want to do Ghostbusters 2 without first doing Ghostbusters. So we'll have to probably look at Ghostbusters first, John. But I would like to actually debate Ghostbusters 2. And maybe you'll be around too, John, when we finally get to that. And we can debate it a little bit because we will have a different perspective, I think.
And that would be interesting to cover too, actually, during getting around October, you know, too. It's a perfect Halloween kind of movie. You know what I mean? Maybe we could ramp up to October.
There you go. Yeah, that's a great idea.
You know?
Yeah, around Halloween time, we could hit the Ghostbusters movies. And actually, when does Afterlife come out? That might be even close to when Afterlife is coming out, isn't it?
I'll be honest with you. I was so excited for that movie and I forgot it's coming out. I don't know when it's coming out, if it's coming out. It's like Top Gun Maverick. I don't know when it's coming out, if it's coming out. I have no idea.
Well, Maverick keeps getting changed. I know that. But I thought Afterlife... Afterlife is supposed to be coming out June 11th.
Wow. Okay.
So we might be talking about Ghostbusters much sooner.
Yeah. Much sooner.
I think we should do that. We definitely should talk about the other films in anticipation for Afterlife. We can do that dovetail thing we've been trying to do where we've got the new with the old, you know what I mean? Kind of together. Right. So that's coming up pretty soon. So John, we may be talking about Ghostbusters very, very soon. And that'll be fun.
And along these lines, I'm going to throw this out there because I was thinking about this today. My wife and I are going to go see Quiet Place 2, hopefully this evening. And what's interesting is when I think about a lot of the current films, most of the sci-fi films that we've been getting, there's been some, you know, exceptions to that, like Ex Machina and stuff. There's been some films that have been exceptions to that. But, you know, a lot of the sci-fi stuff that gets really highly touted, it gets the big advertising budget, gets everybody talking a lot, is a lot of franchise stuff. It's a Star Wars movie, Star Trek movie, blah, 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 whatever movie. Like, it's all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I was thinking about, like, within recent memory, one of those cool sci-fi films that's either a new idea or an interesting take on an idea that we've seen before that's really good. Kind of like what the Terminator did. You know, the Terminator was an interesting sci-fi idea because it was almost like a serial killer movie, but it turned out it was a robot from the future, you know, and it works, you know, it doesn't seem silly when you get to the end and it turns out it's a robot from the future. And again, borrowed on some ideas that actually had been, was it Outer Limits or Twilight Zone? You know, kind of borrowed some of those ideas, but looked at it in a different way. And so I was thinking about that and, you know, Quiet Place is one of those really good sci-fi films that's newer. So I'm really excited to see Quiet Place 2. Not to say it's going to be on the same level as Terminator 2, but I'm excited to go see it because it's one of the more recent sci-fi films that's really held my imagination. And I'm curious to see what they do with it, you know, because it's a new idea. Kind of like Terminator was a totally brand new idea at the time, an interesting take on it at least. So,
Interesting. Yeah, I can't relate, unfortunately, just because I haven't seen it.
Oh,
I haven't seen either one, but. Do we have it?
We got a little bit of a slow. Yeah, a little bit of a hiccup there in the stream. But if you get a chance, Eric, definitely check out Quiet Place. Quiet Place is actually pretty good. Cool. I'm excited to go see Quiet Place 2, hopefully this evening. All right. So I feel like that's pretty good. Seems like we're both recommending Terminator 2. Again, the idea here with, our Rogues retrospective or noon matinee type things, as it were, is, hopefully to talk about something that's kind of fun that you can go watch. Now, the trick is, I don't know where you can stream this, if it's on one of the services or not. I saw earlier in the comment in the Rogues Gallery.
It's on Prime.
Is it on Prime? It's on Amazon Prime.
But I did want to mention formats very briefly. So if you look over here, on the back of this, I'm just briefly showing that. There's a lot of special stuff on this version. Okay, there's a lot of special stuff on this version. And one of the things that has been kind of a raging debate out there is about whether, whether Blu-rays have really kind of almost killed physical media and 4K is kind of going the same direction. If you look at a lot of the Blu-ray and 4K versions of films these days, they just don't have all that stuff. You know what I mean? That these ones do, the featurettes, all the deleted scenes. This one has like a 32-page booklet in it. It has an actual, I'll pull it out real quick just so you can see it. Like, it has a thick book, chock full of like pictures and everything like that.
Yeah, go back to the full screen, Eric, because I pulled down the graphics so you could show the back of the DVD box.
Yeah, so this is also the slip cover too. But you can just see like all the different, all the different additional features. And of course, there are two versions of the film with this. But then, like I said, like it comes with this booklet. And this is a pretty thick booklet. It's like I thought it's 32 pages or something like that. It's got pictures and, insights into the film. And when they say they don't make them like they used to, that's really the case with this particular film. And people have been talking about that with all sorts of films, that the Blu-ray versions and the 4K versions are just don't have all the features. In fact, a lot of times they don't have that special edition or that director's cut. It's only the theatrical version. So I just wanted to point that out because we haven't really commented on that on this show about that sort of debate that's been going on because it's a real thing. And I do recommend this particular copy if you can get your hands on it. Don't worry. Don't worry about the 4K. Although if you do have the Blu-ray or 4K, I would be curious to know if you think that really does enhance the film that much, having it in Blu-ray or 4K. This is an awesome version of the film. It's an awesome version of the film.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And like Eric said, I have the same version. And I just like being able to go, between the theatrical and then actually watch the special edition. And the behind the scenes documentary material on that one is really great too. That's one of the things I miss most about some of this stuff is the really in-depth, behind the scenes breakdown of the film. And it's almost kind of like a mini film school for those of us that are interested in terms of storytelling and how they're structuring and why they're using certain effects and the manner in which they use it. It's just really, really interesting. So,
and that's my bread and butter as BTS. I mean, that's what we're doing on Staycation. We do BTS. So it's like, I'm not just into it, from the perspective of someone who just likes BTS. I actually do behind the scenes for films. So, I mean, I really love that stuff. I can't get enough of it.
I can't either. I've talked before. It's like there's some really great stuff. For example, I hate the theatrical version of the Daredevil film that came out several years ago that had Ben Affleck in it. I don't like the theatrical version. I prefer the director's cut. But the reason that you might want to own the DVD for the original theatrical release is because that behind-the-scenes documentary on it about the making of that film is so terribly interesting and compelling. You have to see that.
There you go.
So Aliens Quadrilogy is the same thing. It's like being able to get the full inside dope on exactly what happened, with Alien 3 is so intriguing and interesting, and to see how far the actual film they shot diverged from what they were actually building sets for is absolutely insane. So yeah, behind the scenes on a questionable movie,
you know, is always interesting. That's definitely
interesting. Yeah, very cool. All right, so if that's good, I guess let's go ahead and segue over into pop culture news. I do have one brief story, if it's okay if I go quick.
Eric, go
first. I need to reshare my screen. I don't understand why my screen stopped sharing. Let me get my screen share back up. I had it actually loaded to go. Wow. What is that? Is that flickering on your end too?
It is flickering.
All right. Well, never mind. I'll just read you what it says. Sorry about that, everyone. Not trying to give everyone a weird episode. all I wanted to talk about, let's see, wait, maybe it looks like it's going to be okay now. That was really weird. Okay, here we go. All I wanted to talk about, this is actually coming from, this is coming from The Wrap. This actually broke a couple days ago. Paul Soles, voice of Spider-Man in 1960s animated series, dies at 90. This is by Reed Nakamura. It says, Canadian actors' other credits include Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Marvel superheroes. So just real quickly, we'll get into this. Paul Soles, the voice actor who starred in the original animated Spider-Man series in the 1960s, has died at the age of 90. The news is announced by Soles' manager, Angela Wright, of Edna Talent Management, in a Facebook post Friday. Paul Soles is a truly Canadian treasure, Wright wrote, he lived a long life with so many adventures along the way. Rest in peace. According to an obituary in Canada's The Globe and Mail, Soles died in Toronto on Wednesday, May 26. No cause of death was listed. Soles voiced the title character in ABC's animated Spider-Man series, which ran for three seasons on ABC and in syndication between 1967 and 1970. Soles starred alongside Bernard Cohen, Paul Kligman, and Peg Dixon. He also voiced Hermie, the misfit elf in Rankin-Bass' stop-motion Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer special in 1964. His other voice acting credits include Rocket Robin Hood, King of the Beasts, the Marvel Superheroes, and the King Kong Show. So just wanted to throw this out there and just take a moment to celebrate, in my mind anyway, and remember one of the most iconic voices in, like, my childhood. Like, you know, to me, when I hear Spider-Man talking in my head, I don't hear Tom Holland. I don't hear Tobey Maguire. I don't hear any of those people. I actually hear the voice of Peter Parker and Spider-Man from the 1960s animated cartoon. And to me, it's such a classic, that original version. So I just want to take a moment and to, you know, acknowledge the tremendous work of Paul Soles, in addition to being Spider-Man. The fact that he was actually one of the original voices of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is very interesting. I honestly didn't realize that was him. So just want to take a moment and just mark his passing and say rest in peace. Obviously, our condolences to his friends and family. Had you heard about this, Eric?
No, I hadn't. And, you know, it's funny because as far as Spider-Man goes, I'm not that familiar with the 1960s series. I'm aware of its existence. I may have seen an episode or two in my childhood, but I haven't seen it since. I don't know. Is it available on Disney Plus? Do you know if it's available on Disney Plus, Dave?
It's not, and I don't understand why. They have every other animated version of Spider-Man on Disney Plus, but for some reason they don't actually have this particular version, which is really unusual when you consider this originally aired on ABC. You would think they would have the rights to it, but I guess there's some kind of issue with the 1960s Spider-Man that they're not able to actually put it on Disney Plus, or maybe they're sitting on it. Maybe they have the rights to it and they're waiting for some reason, but
maybe it's too politically incorrect. I don't know. But anyway,
it may be. Who knows?
I am very familiar with the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer special, and I used to watch that every single year as a kid. I think we have a physical copy now that I got for my kids. But that was always like a big, highly anticipated treat for me. So that I can definitely relate to, and definitely rest in peace, because that was a huge part of my childhood. Huge part of my childhood.
And again, my apologies for that weird flickering thing. You know, I keep thinking at some point we need a different way to do this, maybe even like a screenshot of the actual story, you know what I mean? And and yeah, I've actually thought about the live website. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've thought about that myself. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can coordinate something, Eric, and kind of handle this differently moving forward in the future. My apologies again to everyone. So,
StreamYard itself actually says that having a lot of open tabs is bad. So, I have a brief one. This is an older story. It's kind of funny because I figured that the show was actually going to go short. I thought we would get through the review in maybe 30 minutes or something like that, and we ended up taking the full hour. So I'll go through this very briefly because it is an older story, and it was meant to be filler. I just was like, I got to find something to talk about. So we haven't addressed this at all, but this is a Deadline article. It is a little bit older. It's from the May 21st, so this has been talked by other sources for a while. But it says, Henry Cavill to star in Liongate's Highlander reboot from Chad Stahelski. It says, in the world of the Highlander films, there can be only one, and Henry Cavill has his eyes on the title. Sources tell Deadline that the Man of Steel star is in talks for one of the lead roles in Liongate's reboot of Highlander with John Wick director Chad Stahelski helming. It says Kerry Williamson's penned the script. It does go on to say that there is no confirmation about what role he'll be playing. And the other thing that I thought is interesting is I have heard one of the reasons I would decide to bring this up is I've heard a lot of other people commenting on this. The biggest thing I keep hearing is there is no need for a Highlander remake. And I 100% agree with that. I just want to put that out there. I do 100% agree. There is no need for a Highlander remake. That is another one of the films that I personally own in my collection. And again, I do not have an extensive collection of media, of any films. But I do want to go on to say, this article says, at this point, we have no idea what this is going to be. We don't know what character he's playing. We don't know if this is going to be some sort of sequel, you know, a progression of the story, or if he's, you know, if he's going to be playing just a completely different character, maybe like in parallel. We don't know any of that. So I just, that's really the main thing that I wanted to put out there is at this point, we don't know. I personally do not support a remake. I think that would be a disaster. I do not support that, but we don't know at this point if that's what they're going to do. This may be like a completely different, like, you know, kind of like the series, right? A lot of people like the television series. That was kind of really its own thing, even though it was, you know, related, you know, they did have, well, they're both McLeods, right? But they had, you know, the original actually show up in that and things like that. And so we don't know at this point exactly what their take will be. I will go on record as saying I do not support a remake. But if they are going to do something like a sequel or do something maybe in parallel where it's different characters, might be fun.
Well, let me just go ahead and throw this out there. I don't feel like there's any need to make a Highlander remake either. And while I know that Highlander is probably falling out of people's consciousness and it was a popular franchise, I just have this feeling that, you know, when I look at Highlander, the first film is definitely a classic in my mind. And I really enjoyed the television series, actually. Actually, season two into season three is such an interesting development, actually, for, you know, the TV version of the character and where that goes. You know, and that production only became maligned because I think it was the lead actor wanted out of his contract and did something drastic. And that film suffered some production problems because of that. But the television series is actually really good. It's definitely very dated. If you go back and rewatch it, it's definitely very dated. It's definitely a product of its time. But that's the thing. So is the original Highlander film. I feel like we're about to have the Mortal Kombat debate all over again, because when I think of Highlander, I think of the music and I think of the time in which it was made. You know, you take away that Queen music and it's not even the same film anymore. And again, it's going to lose so much of what makes it, in my mind, a cult classic. When you take that music out, there's no reason to do it. And then the idea that you're going to make a modern, current, contemporary film and put the Queen music in, well, that's weird. So I guess that's the thing. I don't understand how you would even make a Highlander reboot. I understand how you could do it. Like, you could write stuff and you could shoot stuff and you could make a movie. I don't mean like that. I'm just talking in terms of, like, when you talk about the things that made – Highlander interesting. When you want to talk about Connor's story, you want to talk about Duncan's story, you know, whatever that is. I feel like it's such a product of its time, the television series and the movies, regardless of how you feel about Highlander 2, The Quickening. Those are such a product of the time in which they were made that I just don't understand how you would do that today and have it be the same thing. It would be so far removed from what the original Highlander productions were that it would just seem kind of weird. So the idea of doing this just sounds weird to me. And let me just throw this out there. If you want to see a movie that has Henry Cavill in it, that has a lot of swordplay, that's actually a really good movie, you should just go watch Count of Monte Cristo.
I've never seen one. I'll have to check it out. Do you know if it's available on any streaming platforms or anything like that?
I don't know, but it is such a great film. Now, it's got a very, very young Henry Cavill in it. He does not sword fight in it. Other people sword fight in it. It's got Jim Caviezel, Guy Pearce is in it. Absolutely fantastic movie. I love The Count of Monte Cristo. That was such a great movie with fun swordplay. So if you just want to see a film that has swordplay in it, that's a period piece movie, go rent on demand or watch Count of Monte Cristo. You won't be disappointed.
The funny thing is we actually reviewed the Witcher series, the first episode, and we didn't really like it. But actually, that is a good example of him if you want to see him doing swordplay. He definitely does do that in the Witcher series. And I know a lot of other people actually really like that show quite a bit, especially the first season. I know there are concerns about the second season. There are a lot of people that actually like the Witcher series. So that's one to recommend as well. And we did a review. We did a review of that. It was not positive, but we did do a review of the Witcher series. And I believe we also did a review of the original Highlander. I think we've actually done one of those as well. So keep that in mind if you want to check out our takes on those two things. It's for some more, like, you know, Henry Cavill news.
Well, all I'm going to say is that if you're thinking, give me the prize, and you want to see a really great movie, you know, you go rewatch the original Highlander, and then go check out The Count of Monte Cristo. It's a really good movie.
There you go. There you go.
I can't recommend Witcher, but Count of Monte Cristo is really good. All right, so we're at this point now. Do we have anything? Do you have anything you want to cover for Streaming Wars? Or
no, the I only brought up that again. I brought that up pretty much as filler. It's kind of an old story at this point, but we'd never given our take on it. You know, we actually ended up having a longer show than I thought we would. I thought we were going to be really reaching for time, but I appreciate it's actually, I think in part it's you guys, the Rogues Gallery. You were doing some good comments and stuff, and we had to address them. And I like that. I like that when you engage and you give like good comments that we can actually give our own takes on and things like that. I enjoy the conversation. So yeah, I don't have anything else. It has been pretty slow since Thursday. Thursday was incredible. By the way, I do advise you to check out that episode if you haven't, because there was so much news. I mean, we were buried in it on Thursday. You know, we were buried in it. And I agree, Lynn, it's better to burn out than to fade away.
if only one of us had that really great Clancy voice, it's better to burn out than fade away. I can't even do it, but I tried. There you go. I tried.
Yeah, nobody has that voice. Nobody has that voice. I mean, that's a huge Clancy part Bryant. Of him. Yeah. You know what I mean? That voice. So.
Yeah, for sure. Kurgan was awesome. And again, such a great villain. And again, linked to a particular person's performance. Like, I just don't see how you can cast someone to be the Kurgan, but the Kurgan, that's the thing. It's like, so much that makes that film a cult classic is, I think John was one who made the comment earlier about T2. You know, the first Highlander film is lightning in a bottle.
Right.
You know, and I don't see how you can make another film. You can always make another film. And Terminator franchise is a perfectly great example. They have made a lot of further Terminator
films.
A lot of films. And a television series. And none of it has ever really clicked or captured that magic.
Because I think at the essence, and this is a theme of the show. I say it all the time. Hollywood just doesn't seem to understand what makes a particular franchise what it is, what makes it cool, why people like it. Instead, they just want to slap the name back on it. They want everything to be like Magnum and Hawaii Five-0. And I've made that analogy before. They just want to slap that name on there, take the basic premise, and then do whatever they want. And for the average consumer, they're fine with that. They don't care. Those are hit shows. You know what I mean? They don't care. But I think for genre people, we do care because we care about things like lore. We want to see proper continuity. We want to have respect for the original actors. They mean something to us. They're not just interchangeable like they are for the general public. Because I think that's really what it comes down to. I think for the general public, they just don't care. You know what I mean? It's kind of like mindless entertainment. They're tired at the end of the day and just want to watch something. I don't feel like genre fans are that way. I feel like genre fans, they seek out that stuff. You know, that it's like, I want to watch this because I'm really into this. It's like a thing to me, you know?
You know, and along those lines, it makes me think of the first Transformers movie. If, yeah. if they had someone else other than Peter Cullen doing the voice of Optimus Prime, I don't know how I would have felt. I mean, because they had a great actor do Megatron. I would have preferred it have been Frank Welker, to be perfectly honest. But when you hear the trailer and you hear Optimus Prime sounds like Optimus Prime, it's a Transformers movie now. You know, but if Optimus had sounded like someone else, I don't know if it
would have clicked with me as well. But the average fan, honestly, the average fan wouldn't have cared. The average typical fan wouldn't have cared. The people that cared are the people that grew up on the 80s cartoon, right? That's the people that cared. But the average fan, probably, you know, the average consumer wouldn't have meant a thing to them. And by the way, that is a great example, too, because voice actors get treated like garbage in Hollywood when it comes to anything live action or, you know, the adaptations and things like that. Hollywood is notorious for that. And Peter Cullen is like one of the few exceptions where he didn't get treated like that. And I'm so happy about that. I'm so happy for him because he totally deserves it. Because to me, he owns that role. And as long as he wants it, he owns that role. And it's one of the few examples that you see because they replace voice actors with, you know, Hollywood live actors all the time. But then at the same time, they allow the Hollywood actors to do the voiceovers too. And it really pisses me off. It really does. I think it's so disrespectful to so many of these voice actors. Lynn mentions, I listened to the Queen soundtrack album, A Kind of Magic, a lot while drawing.
And that goes along with what I was saying. It's like Highlander to me and that music, they go together. It's like Mortal Kombat. You know, we just saw a Mortal Kombat movie disconnected from that music. And it's not the same thing. And it feels out of sorts. Like it does, like the heart of the whole production is like gone, you know? And that's the same thing. It's like Highlander to me is so associated with the music. I don't see how you do that without that music. And I don't see how you just take that music and throw it into a new movie either. So.
No, I agree. And of course they will. I mean, they'll put the theme, you know, the Born to Be Kings, they'll put that in there. It's guaranteed, but.
Yeah, but the Queen song is so great. But it's just like.
But, you know, the bottom line is they can't come up with anything original, and that's been a problem in Hollywood since its creation. I mean, if you look at the history of Hollywood, remakes have always been the norm. So people kind of think this is like a new thing. No, it's not. They've been doing remakes since the beginning. And then, you know, you think about the transition from the silent era to the talkies. They remade everything because they wanted to make it as a talkie. Then when they got color, they remade everything as a color. I mean, Hollywood has been doing this since its inception.
Hollywood's got a good comment. He says, when I listen to Queen, I find myself waiting for Flash Gordon. There's another film. You disconnect it from the music. It's not the same thing. You know, with that music, with the art direction, with the way that it's performed, it's a rock opera. You take that music out, it's not the same thing. So
no, I mean, that's for a lot of people, that's what makes the film. I mean, that's what makes it kind of fun, is the soundtrack. There's no doubt about it. And it's really interesting what Queen did with Flash Gordon, because they really are part of the actual soundtrack as opposed to just kind of incorporating a few songs, you know, even more so than Highlander. Queen was involved with the Flash Gordon soundtrack. And it really is like, it's like a Queen album. That's basically what the Flash, you know, it's like a concept album. You know what I mean? That's basically what the Flash Gordon soundtrack is. It's like a concept album by Queen.
Well, and I think of, you know, when I think of, well, how do I put this without losing my train of thought? All I was just going to say is that I love that opening credits with the Flash Gordon movie with the Queen music. You know, that's just one of my favorite openings because it takes the original Alex Raymond artwork and puts it with the music, and it's great. It's just so awesome. And along those lines, sort of like a really bad B movie that's not a great movie, but I enjoy rewatching, is actually Return of Swamp Thing. And one of the things I like about Return of Swamp Thing is I love the fact that they took the Creedence Clearwater, Born on a Bayou, and they have a lot of the Stephen Bissett, Bernie Wrightson, like all the really cool Swamp Thing comic book cover artwork, and it's coming up as they do Born on a Bayou. And those are some of the, in my mind, still best opening sequences for comic book inspired superhero type films, is because it actually takes the inspiration, matches it with, you know, really great musical choice, and it really sets a tone for what you're about to watch.
Yeah, I hear that. Definitely hear that. Len mentions that he loves the dialogue in the Flash Gordon soundtrack. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I actually do have that somewhere. I have the CD somewhere. Hollywood mentions that I miss movie soundtracks. I do too. Actually, Dave, I think a while ago you recommended a site that has a bunch of them. You featured that on one of our pop culture segments a while back. Do you remember what site that was that had all that?
Soundtracks. It's La La Land Records. La La Land Records. They actually they don't just do movie soundtracks. They actually do television show soundtracks. It's kind of more mostly orchestral, but sometimes they do just do straight soundtracks as well. If you're into movie music, like if you love all that kind of stuff, La La Land, they do a lot of limited release stuff. Like, for example, like if you love Batman, the animated series, they've actually collected a lot of the Shirley Walker music actually from Batman, the animated series. They have those available. They actually did also kind of offbeat Michael Kamen's music actually from the first Die Hard movie, for example, is really great. You can go over there and actually get the Die Hard soundtrack with the actual Michael Kamen, you know, original score, you know. I love that kind of stuff. But La La Land Records is really great for that kind of stuff if you're into it.
Yeah, we did feature that in a past episode, if you want to check that out sometime. I can't remember what else the main topic was for that one, but we did talk about that. And then Lynn mentions about remakes. Speaking of remakes, it's like A Star is Born and Here Comes Mr. Jordan / Heaven Can Wait have been remade multiple times. At least four or so each. It's a great example. A Star is Born is a great example, Len. That movie has been remade like four times, at least, as you said, at least. So it's not a new thing. People do think it's some sort of new phenomenon. It's not. Hollywood has never had ideas. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. They did like in like maybe 1915, you know? And ever since then, they've just recycled the same stuff over and over again. So, that's the truth.
At some point, shouldn't it be called A Star is Reborn?
Yeah.
Or Born Again? A Star is Born Again?
Well, maybe they'll actually do a sequel sometime instead of just a remake. Wouldn't that be novel? A sequel instead of a remake. That's what's novel. That's what's different, you know? So,
Lynn brings up a comment. He says that Dave bought a Best Of soundtrack while at Jack's Music Shop in Red Bank, New Jersey, right? Remember listening to it in the car on the trip. Yes, I did, Lynn. And the soundtrack I bought was actually the Best Of Alan Silvestri. So on there was the orchestral themes for Predator, Back to the Future, but also some other lesser things like Volcano. Alan Silvestri's done a lot of really great movie music. It was a really interesting purchase. And that was right after we had actually gone to the Secret Stash there at Red Bank, New Jersey. So,
yeah. And then James does mention there's also the never-ending prequels. That to me is a little bit more of a newer concept. I can't think like off the top of my head, like classic golden age Hollywood films that used to deal with a lot of prequels. That to me is sort of a newer phenomenon, the concept of the prequel. And of course, you know, the one who really did that, you know, in my mind is Star Wars, because they decided to name Star Wars episode four, you know, which it was not episode four originally. In fact, I even have the original theatrical version on DVD. I have that set and it just says Star Wars, you know. And then they when they re-released it, that's when they put in, when they realized it was a hit, that's when they put in, you know, episode 4, A New Hope. And once they did that, everybody was wondering about the other three episodes. So I feel like that's kind of almost something that Star Wars created, and now it's a big thing. You know, now it's like we always got to have prequels. So, you know, yeah, I think that is a little bit more of a new phenomenon as opposed to the remake, which has been around since the beginning.
Very true. Well, I think with that, we're probably at 1 hour, 30 minutes. Looks like we do still have some more comments.
We can give them the last word. We can give them the last word.
Okay, cool. All right. So I think we're going to go ahead and end the show right here. We said we weren't going to go, you know, hopefully too much longer than an hour. But I want to thank all of you for watching and listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Beatty. I've been one of your hosts. If you're curious to check out some of the stuff I've been working on, you can always definitely visit KirbyTees.com. Over at KirbyTees.com, we've got a lot of interesting t-shirts over there. You can actually not just only support Kirby Tees and actually support what we're doing here, the Retro Rogues Live, but you can also support some of the artists who've actually contributed artwork over there on some of the t-shirts, such as Sarah Aerosmith or even the Janimal. But we would definitely appreciate too if you would get maybe a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt for yourself and support what we're doing here on the show. We would greatly appreciate your support. And along those lines, if you know anyone you think might like the Retro Rogues Live, we have actually changed up our format, broken it up in some different kind of, you know, episodes. We got more collector focused one on Thursday. We now have the the Rogues Retrospective that we're now doing on Sunday. Tell people about the show. You know, let friends and family know if you think they might enjoy it. One of the things that's most fun about this show is actually the dialogue, the conversation we have with you, our dear valued viewer, our dear valued listener. So we hope that you will share this with your friends and family. Enough about that. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for being on here and providing his unique perspective, as always, and his point of view. But Eric, please tell the folks of the watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
So I'm most active on Twitter. My account is at BassGod14. That's at BassGod14. My DMs are always open. Always open to show suggestions. Always open to rumors or news that you're hearing about. Definitely hit me up because I'm definitely open to hearing about it. BassGod14 is also the official Twitch. It's also the official YouTube. So if you comment on there, more likely than not, I'm going to be the one commenting back to you. Definitely encourage you to check those out on YouTube. We do try to do some clips of the show, so we try to break it up. And I do want to encourage folks, if you came in late, remember, this is a streaming show, and our streams are always still available after we're done. You can go back and watch the rest of the show. So I encourage you to do that, especially if you missed anything. Really want to encourage folks to check out the replay, because we do understand people do come in late and all that stuff. And that's one of the nice things about doing a streaming show. So we do have a few more comments. Lynn Workman says, recently watched the prequel for The Thing the other day. Another that has been remade at least four times. James says, at least they never did a Close Encounters of the Third Kind 2. They were supposed to, but they didn't. That would be an interesting discussion, James, I have to say. That would be an interesting discussion. And Lynn says he was glad he caught a few minutes. We'll send you the samurai art. I'm at the computer now. I'm sure that's a message for Dave. And then I did want to give Hollywood Jackson the last word. Let me find his comment because I really like this one. He says, we want to see Chuck Norris destroy the Picardinator. And with that, we'll give Hollywood the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BassGod14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty
retrorogues.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retrorogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.